On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk quite a bit about the very interesting Brandon Nimmo for Marcus Semien trade the Rangers and Mets made over the weekend. We celebrate Tatsuya Imai's comments about he doesn't want to join the Dodgers, wants to beat them. And it's Tuesday, but still, an edition of the good, the bad, the ugly, involving chess and boxing and the word festooned, all that and more. Here we go. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world willing to make a Finding Nimmo joke in November of 2025. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And every year at Thanksgiving, my family watches a movie together. And it is a difficult thing to do. I am in charge of selecting said movie. It's a big responsibility. And Finding Nimmo is actually quite a crowd-pleasing idea, and I'm adding it to my list. So thanks, David Stearns.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, that is it's a pretty high approval rating. If we're talking Pixar movies over the years. That is certainly a classic. Will we
tough
work
for dentists.
Wallaby way into... Yeah, true. Will we work Wallaby way into our analysis here? Stay tuned, folks. Let's get right to it. It's Tuesday, and we have quite the trade to talk about, and that is our opener.
Most baseball trades in this day and age are not particularly scintillating for the average fan. And that is because most baseball trades in this day and age are one major league player going from a bad team to a good team in exchange for a trio, a quartet, a quintet, a sextet of prospects that most people have never heard of, that most people have never seen play. And while nerds like us would love to sit here and tell you about, you know, Leo DeVries and co, that is not headline grabbing news. Those are not trades in the way that most people in the fantasy sports landscape think about a transaction. And so whenever we have one of these rare big league vet for big league vet deals, it is a real, real refreshing moment. And that is what we got on Sunday evening as the Mets and the Rangers consummated a swap, sending Brandon Nimmo, the longest tenured Met, from Queens to Arlington in exchange for second baseman Marcus Semien, who will be heading to Queens. Jordan Schusterman, what a fascinating deal. Where would you like to begin?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We just talked about the Grayson Rodriguez for Taylor Ward trade, another one-for-one swap that was compelling. A lot more so because of maybe the team-related contexts, right, where you just have these two franchises that, of course, have disappointed in different ways in recent years, and these two players that... One player in Taylor Ward who really doesn't inspire any opinions. It's just like, oh yeah, it's Taylor Ward. He's pretty good. And then Grayson Rodriguez, who has this big range of opinions based on the short sample size. I bring that up because, again, that felt significant and rare, but it was still a level below because it's still a lower bar to really have a strong opinion about Taylor Ward, certainly Taylor Ward, and even Grayson Rodriguez. This is very different. These are two players that have meant a lot to both of these teams in very different respects. Obviously, Marcus Semien on the Rangers. The Rangers were his fourth major league franchise. But Marcus Semien arriving in Texas alongside Corey Seager and winning the World Series, first World Series in franchise history, was a huge deal. And you'll never be able to take that away from him. You know, what he was able to do coming over in free agency and in that 2023 season was astonishing. And Marcus Semien is one of the more underrated just kind of careers that we've had in this generation of baseball because he was so mid for so long and then suddenly was just like, you know what? I'm an MVP candidate. That is still something I wrap my head around every time I open up his baseball reference page. But And then you have Nimmo, which, you know, to be in an organization for as long as he had been. Yes, we started to look at the roster around him and read some reports that maybe Brandon Nimmo is going to get squeezed out of this picture. Even still, it's just shocking and kind of abrupt to have the ending to a tenure like this that dates all the way back to the 2011 draft, which is a long time, folks. We just talked about Taylor Ward being with the Angels for a long time, but Brandon Nimmo, a high school pick in 2011, a 10-year major leaguer with the New York Mets. He's the guy, and not just 10, I mean, he's been there, and especially the last half decade, we'll talk about his durability. He's been in the lineup. You know, when we started to grapple with the possibility of Pete Alonso moving on from the Mets, if Pete Alonso leaves and Brandon Nimmo's gone, it's just going to be a very different Mets team, because when you turn on the Mets over the last 4 years, the chances are that Pete Alonso and Brandon Nimmo are in the lineup, and now there's a chance that neither of them will be. So that's my preamble to just like, whoa, okay, these are two important baseball players. But then you get into this thing of like, wait a minute, what's the point? Why did these teams make such a dramatic move to trade two players that have such heft? And then you realize, okay, well, how good are these players right now, really? And what can they do for these two teams? And then you think like, okay, well, which side do I actually like this more? I like that I put out a Twitter poll, and after over 6,000 votes, we basically ended up with a 50-50 split of what people liked more. I believe the Rangers ended up edging out that Twitter poll 52-48. But let's just turn it to you, Jake. Let's start very simply. Do you like this trade for one side more than the other?
I'll go even simpler, Jordan, and I'll send it back to you. Who's better? Who's a better player? Brandon Nimmo or Marcus Semien? I think that's a different question than who do you like the trade more for. I think if you're just comparing these guys as players, Nimmo at present or what he just produced, I would say is probably a better player, and I feel better about his overall production moving forward. He was a squarely above average hitter last year. His defense in a quarter is fine. Semien, the offense kind of tailspun. I think he finished 2025 with a OPS plus around like 86, 89. He was a bad hitter. Now his defense at second base is sensational, and he brings a lot of attributes in terms of leadership. And like, you can say the words winning player and no one will laugh at you. That being said, I think Nimmo right now is probably the better player. That being said, I like this trade for both teams. And I think the reason I like this trade for both teams is that what it allows both of these teams to do moving forward. It opens up a lot of doors for both the Mets and the Rangers. I'll go and start from the Mets perspective. Brandon Nimmo represented real sentimentality. When you trade a player that's been around for that long, you really do need to overcome the fan backlash that might accompany opting to depart from that player, right? Especially when you have extended them for, remember, Brandon Nimmo was 5 more years on his contract. This is a player who it was very easy to one day imagine his number being retired at Citi Field. He is up there on Mets leaderboards. And so when you part with a guy like that, you are choosing, you know, prudence and calculating efficiency over sentimentality. But I think what this allows the Mets to do is go in any number of directions now at their roster. You could argue that they could add pretty much any of the top free agent hitters, and obviously pitchers, any of the top free agent hitters to their roster and move guys around and trade guys where it would all fit the pieces together.
Yeah, and that's what's both fun and I think terrifying for Mets fans. You know, you do this move early enough in the winter that pretty much everything is still on the board, you know, so, except for Josh Naylor.
Let me hop back in. Let me hop back into that, where it's like, that's a great point. This move for the Mets especially cannot be evaluated in and of itself. There is so much more to this decision. If the Mets enter pitchers and catchers and this is the biggest move they did this winter, I will go do a podcast about racquetball, right? Like, that's not happening. This is a preamble. This is a prologue to their offseason of transactioning. The Rangers, it's a little bit different, where I don't think there's a huge second swing coming from them. But from the Mets, the reason that you're willing to part with Nimmo, right, is just the doors that it goes and opens.
Yeah, and let's stick on the Mets, but then I do want to get back to, well, I guess we can stay on this. I think you're overrating Marcus Semien's decline a little bit. I think that the notion that Marcus Semien could have more WAR than Meredith Nimmo next year is not that hard to imagine.
No.
Just because totally of the agree. Defensive difference. And it was a weird year offensively. I think it's more about the trajectory as much as what he just did, where he dealt with an injury for the first time in a long time. I mean, this guy had been one of the Ironmans in baseball, basically played 162, you know, three times, 159 in 2024, dealt with, I think, a fractured foot in 2025 that really limited him. The OPS plus was 97, so it's not as bad as you described, but some of that is park adjusted to a Globe Life field that had, that for whatever reason that a lot of people are still discussing, was like one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in baseball. And so his numbers are actually kind of inflated. But yeah, I mean, 669 OPS a year after dropping to a 699 OPS, down from the 826 that he posted when he was an MVP finalist in 2023. So clearly it's going in the wrong direction, and he just turned 35, right? So that's why you're a little bit worried about Marcus Semien's offense and bat. Now, that said,
He's not a game-changing offensive player anymore. I feel pretty good about that. He's a bat that you can win with, not a bat that you win because of at this point in his career.
Totally fair. Totally fair. Whereas Nimmo, because he literally has never been a below-average hitter. I mean, his OPS plus has been above 100 all 10 years of his career, which is very impressive. And he's left-handed, a little bit younger. I think that, yes, that in terms of upgrading the lineup, for sure. But the defensive, you know, maneuvering is going to be important for Texas. It sounds like Nimmo, interestingly, according to Chris Young, is going to play right, which he really has not played in 5 or 6 years.
You know why?
He's played some more center, played some left. I guess that's, they'd rather keep Wyatt Langford in left, keep him in center. What are you doing with Evan Carter? There are obviously more questions on Texas's side because they were not remotely close to the postseason this past year. Now you could say, what do you mean? They only had two fewer wins than the Mets, which is true. That says more about the Mets than I think it does the Rangers. But I also think that I really have no idea what to expect from Texas moving forward. I think that the discourse around their finances has been very interesting, troubling to a lot of fans, and frustrating because you just won the World Series a couple years ago, and now a lot of we got to cut back. They, speaking of getting rid of familiar faces, okay, maybe it's not as long of a tenure, but they just non-tendered Adolis Garcia, Jonah Heim, and Josh Spores, and Jacob Webb, right? But those first three are like huge parts of the World Series win, like massive, obvious, all three of them, right? I mean, truly, Spores included. Okay, let's not forget what Josh Spores did in that postseason. I know he's been a complete non-factor the last 2 years. And so the Rangers are dealing with a similar kind of thing right now where they're going to their fans and saying like, hey, be those guys whose jerseys you have and you've come to cheer on and you saw win the first World Series in franchise history. Yeah, they're gone now because we don't want to pay them anymore. Now, those are much more justified moves because of how bad those players have been or unavailable they've been. But the question now, and this is what I wrote about in the immediate aftermath of the trade, is like, okay, Rangers, are you just cutting payroll to cut payroll because you're a baseball team and sometimes the owners decide they don't want to spend as much as they used to? Or are you reallocating these funds towards another big move? Do they have one big free agent signing in them, whether that's on the mound, whether that's in the lineup to fix an offense that was just, honestly, since 2023, for the last 2 years, has been perplexingly awful for reasons that range from park factor to hitting coach to player underperformance to injuries to everything.
Hit coach.
Yeah, to, right. So all of it is related. But the Rangers, I don't want to rule them out. It's possible that this is their big reshuffling, but I don't know what to count with them. But with the Mets, back to them.
Hold up. I want to speed run this, the alignment quickly. So if you're taking Semien away from second base, right? Like, this is a guy who literally played every single freaking day. And so who's playing second base? Well, it probably moves Josh Smith, who was more of a utility type last year, filling in at infield spots when guys were hurt. He was a very, very good player a year ago. He's going to probably be the everyday second baseman. Josh Jung plays third. Seager, whenever he's healthy enough, will play shortstop. And then Ezekiel Duran will move around the infield, with the outfield being Carter, Langford, and Nimmo. I think that makes sense, right? That all fits together. And you can envision a world in which the Rangers don't add to that group between now and opening day. The Mets, position player group. There will be additions. What are the certainties at this point? I think is an interesting way to start. Francisco Alvarez will catch. Francisco Lindor will play shortstop. Marcus Semien will play second. Juan Soto will play right. And Jeff McNeil will probably be somewhere. Beyond that, it's a haze. It's a total haze.
I wouldn't include Jeff McNeil.
Okay, so that court, it's really those four players then, right? It's Alvarez, yeah, Lindor, yeah, Semien, and Soto. And anything else could go in any direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the fun of it. And right, just to wrap up Texas, I do agree with you that the position player group, it's harder to see a bigger move there. Not that they, as I just mentioned, couldn't use more offensive help, to be clear. But it's just they're way thinner on the mound. And I think if they do make a big move, it'll probably be on the mound. And that's also what they've done more recently.
Yeah.
But yeah, for New York, it's just like, man, I mean, how many more trades are still in them? A lot of it hinges on Pete coming back or not, what direction you go, how much more offense you feel like you need to add versus replace. That's before you even get to the bullpen. That's before you're addressing a rotation that, as we saw, was about as volatile as it gets from both the durability and performance standpoint over the course of last season.
So I think you remove the pitching entirely from this conversation as it pertains to the Mets, at least right now. So there's just a million avenues that the Mets can go. Right, they can sign Pete, have him play first, have Beatty or Vientos play third, and then trade the other one. They can go sign Alex Bregman and move Vientos or Beatty to first, trade the other one, and still sign Pete and have one of, like, you could have Vientos DH and you trade Beatty for an arm, or you could sign Cody Bellinger and have him play center field and move McNeil to left. Like, there's just so many different things that you could sign Kyle Schwarber instead of Pete. Right. And he could be the DH. Then you have Vientos a bit, like, there's just a million streets to walk down now. But I think the one thing that this trade does is it necessitates another trade because of this young foursome of infielders the Mets have. That's Ronnie Mauricio. That's Luis Angel Acuna. That's Brett Beatty. And that's Mark Vientos. They do not have space for those four guys. Yesterday on the Zoom with David Stearns was like, yeah, I don't think this trade like blocks those guys' development. And I think that's kind of impossible to say. Like,
well,
I don't know
he
how
also,
that's true.
And he was, his point was like, well, they can all move around, so they're not stuck behind any one person. It's like, yeah, they're stuck behind multiple people.
It's like, okay, so Lindor's going to play short, Semien's going to play second, and someone's going to play first, and they're like, they're all going to play third at the same time? Like,
right. And is that your best option to have them shuffle through the DH spot? Probably not. And that's before you even get to a group of 3 to 4 prospects that they're very open about believing can help them in 2026. Now, that is a lot in the outfield with Carson Bench, but Jet Williams has bounced back and forth between the outfield and the infield. Ryan Clifford's another guy that's reached the upper levels. They just added Nick Morabito to their 40-man roster. He was in the Arizona Fall League. AJ Ewing's another guy that's going to be in AAA next year. So, again, when you're the Mets, you can't just be like, oh, let all the kids play. But as we just said, it's not that clear to give them these paths to do that. So we expect them to continue to be active. I love that this probably necessitates another trade because trades are more fun. We spent all this time, oh, what trade? No, were you going to come up with Marcus Semien for Brandon Nimmo? Probably not. And that is what makes this great. That is what makes the offseason great, because we get to come on here and react to transactions that we cannot predict. Free agency, I say this every year. Free agency, you can spend the whole time putting players with teams. You know they're going to sign at some point. But the trades, they just hit you. And then you just are kind of left to be like, oh, wow, how'd they come up with that one?
Especially because, you know, you read the MLB trade rumors, most, you know, tradable players are the most likely to be traded. Mm-hmm. And those folks do a great job. And neither Brandon Nimmo nor Marcus Semien are on the list. Right. And you're like, right. You're like, David Stearns and Chris Young are just cooking on a different plane right. to the rest of us.
Which is great. Yeah, and I think that's a good place to end it, just to kind of wrap on the financial side of this, right? Is, you know, Semien is owed $72 million over the next 3 years. Nimmo, $102.5 million over the next 5 years. Nimmo, 2 years younger. So really, it's a similar level of age commitment for both of them. Semien making more money over the next two seasons. So Texas kind of lowering their payroll in the short term, taking on more money in the long term with Nimmo. How they reallocate that, if they reallocate that, remains to be seen. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we return,
one more thing. As someone who spent a lot of time watching Brandon Nimmo play in New York, I do not live there anymore, but I am sad that he is gone, both because he was very easy to deal with as a reporter and because his walk-up song is an all-time banger. And all I have to say is, on my best day, I'm a child of God. And on my worst day, I'm a child of God. And thankfully for Brandon Nimmo, God is also in Texas. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. From the Mets to another National League team that is spending a lot of money, I have a nuclear overreaction to share. The Los Angeles Dodgers, they're the juggernaut. They're the bad guy. They are going out and getting every Japanese player to form a super team of Samurai Japan on the west coast of America. But guess what? Not every Japanese player wants to join. If you can't join him, beat him. And that's what Tatsuya Imai is saying. And my overreaction is that Tatsuya Imai is not the hero we deserve, but he is the one we need. A story came out earlier this week that the Japanese starting pitcher, one of the top available arms on the market this winter, said, quote, about the Dodgers, "I want to take them down. I think beating a team like that and becoming world champions would be the most valuable thing in my life." Now, whenever something like this happens, Jordan, and we get a player in Japan, we talked about this with Yuri last week. We get a player in Japan given a quote about where they want or don't want to play. It's hard to like timestamp that quote, and it's difficult to like understand the totality of the quote because you and I don't what?
Speak Japanese,
correct. We don't speak Japanese. However, there is an article on MLB.com written by friend of the program, Michael Clare, and friend of the program, Ayako Oikawa, that has it all laid out for us. And boy, does this make me like Tatsuya Imai.
You're not giving this enough credit because this is not just a story coming out. The context here is crucial. This is a conversation that Imai was having with fellow Cebu Lions icon, Daisuke Matsuzaka, who knows a little something about pitching in Major League Baseball and coming from NPB to MLB with much fanfare. And this was just a very conversation that, again, was translated in many different places, but I think that is important too, including by Yuri, which you can go look on his, of course, on his account, Yaku Cosmo. If you haven't listened to our conversation with Yuri last week, with way more Imai stuff, which was honestly helpful. We asked about Imai's personality and just like the kind of dude that we think he's going to want to be once he gets here and how we've gotten to know these Japanese players from a personality standpoint in a very interesting way over the past few seasons. And the quotes in here about him basically being like, I want to beat the Dodgers, saying, of course, it would be cool to play with Otani and so on, but beating them would be even more special. He also has some very interesting quotes about, okay, do you want to be, not just do you want to be on the Dodgers, the best team, with all these other Japanese players, but on the concept of playing with other Japanese players. This is another thing that I think culturally we're left to trust those who know the language and who understand the background of these individuals about whether players coming over for Japan would prefer to be with other Japanese players or not, because we've gotten varying reports on, and I'm sure it's case by case. Clearly, I think we've learned that it is not.
Yeah.
It is not a one size fits all situation, and there is not one thing that determines whether they elect you. But the quote here again, I'm pulling from Yuri's translation. Since they went to the U.S. before me, I could, if this is on the concept of if he was playing with more Japanese players in MLB. Quote, since they went to the U.S. before me, I could ask them questions like, what did you do in the situation, right? But actually, I don't really desire that. I want to have a sense of survival on my own. There are going to be cultural differences, but part of what excites me is how I'm going to figure out a way to get over these hurdles on my own. So, do we take that to mean there is a 0% chance he is signing with the Dodgers or the Cubs, or who else has a Japanese player right now? The Red Sox. Yoshida, is he still on the Red Sox? The Mets, is Senga still on the Mets? Who knows? The Angels with Kikuchi, right? Like, okay, does that mean there's 0% chance he's signing with those teams? No. Let's not go overboard. But it's a compelling piece of evidence that if the situation is right, he might prefer to kind of go out on his own. Now, let's be clear. What is going to matter in this, as it does in any free agency, who's going to show up with the big check?
Money.
You know, and that's good, as it should, right? He's a Scott Boras client. You know, money's going to talk here. But regardless, I think that this is a nice preamble to a nice setting the stage for what we like to think that he prefers, not from some vague report from someone that knows Imai. Like, this is him saying it to Daisuke Matsuzaka on television. I think we can take that for something.
Next week, a week and a half from now. Oh, wow. No, next week. You and I are going to be in the Dominican Republic. Okay. And you know what we're not going to do down there? We're not going to eat at Applebee's. All right. We're not going to Chili's. Right. We're going to go and we're going to experience the realness as much as we possibly can. And that is what I like the most about what Imai is saying, where it's like, could I be comfortable? Sure. But that's not why I'm doing this, in a way. Like, he's not coming to the States so that he's not leaving Japan so that he can hang out with more Japanese players, right? Like, he wants to push himself beyond. Now, let me be clear. Us choosing to not eat at Applebee's in Santo Domingo does not raise to the level of Tatsuya Imai playing for the Reds or something. However, I think you get my absurd point. And this, I will say, this excites me. Like, this is the type of quote that I want to hear. And I will say this. He leaves the door open a little bit. Of course, I'd enjoy playing alongside Otani, Yamamoto, and Sasaki. If he ends up with the Dodgers after delivering this quote, is honestly going to hit even better. Like, he is by offering this statement, he has only raised the stakes of his free agency in a way that both outcomes are more compelling to me. Right? If he goes full evil and just joins the juggernaut and is like the sixth starter or whatever. That's hilarious.
Well, right.
And if he goes to the Diamondbacks, and like, that's also great.
Yeah. And obviously there's some like in-betweens, right? Like, if he goes to the Padres because he wants to beat the Dodgers, but he gets to hang out with Yu Darvish, it's like, okay, well, what do I do with that? You know, you get a little bit of both. And Yuki Matsui, sorry. I don't want to forget about him.
Yeah, please. But the last thing I'll say, it is easy for him to say this relatively also, because he's probably not going to the Dodgers because they're probably not signing a starting pitcher, right?
Yeah, and probably not.
If the Dodgers didn't have Tyler Glasnow and were in the Tatsuya Imai sweepstakes, I don't think Scott Boras would like his client going out on television in Japan and saying, oh, the team that gives out more money than any other team, I'm not particularly interested in playing for them.
Yes. But this is obviously the easiest layup for Yankees fans who are like, we've been trying to chase down another Japanese star for a while now, and that has not happened yet. Is that a Yankees priority right now? Who's to say? We will find out. But that is certainly what that smelled of. And the last thing I would say about this, regardless of some of the things involving whether you want to play with Japanese players or the cultural difference, I do think that the element of the Dodgers having won again, I've thought about this a lot, not just as it relates to Japanese players, but like, will players want to keep joining the team that keeps winning? I think that generally, yes, they just want the most money and to win. So if it happens to be the Dodgers, then great. But I do wonder if it does add the element of like, I want to be the guy to take him down, which obviously no individual player is capable of doing regardless. But I do wonder if the fact that they just won again strengthens it a little bit more than, say, a year ago, where it's like, okay, yeah, they won once and I want to go join them. But it's not the same thing of like, oh, this is the team. This is the standard above everybody else that just went back to back for the first time in decades. Like, again, it's not the most important thing in free agency. I recognize that. But in terms of how players are talking about the Dodgers from the outside, I do wonder if that adds to it.
I think it depends on the type of player. Where, like, if you're a late in your career player without a ring, you would rather go take a little less from the Dodgers, like Kirby Yates type, right? Where it's like you're a veteran reliever and you're looking for a ring and you go to the Dodgers. I don't think it really moves the needle for a guy like Kyle Tucker. If the Dodgers pay him the most money, he'd go to the Dodgers. If another team does, he would go there. And then when he goes to the other team, he'll say, looking to knock off the Dodgers. And if he goes to the Dodgers, he's saying, looking to never lose a World Series. Like, it's just, to me, that narrative comes in at the end rather than during the process. Enough about the Dodgers, sort of. Let's go through some news and fly around the league. Inalienable TV rights.
Inalienable TV rights. This is, I mean, pretty enormous big picture baseball news because it's just been hovering over the sport for a while, which is, where can you watch the baseball games? When there's a big baseball event, what channel is it going to be on? What streaming service is it going to be on? Are we still calling them the streaming service? Yes, I think we are. But let us welcome Netflix into the fold as a official broadcasting partner of Major League Baseball. Yes, coming off a World Series that was seen by so many people, hilariously, on Fox, which is not really part of any of these discussions. We have news involving a 3-year rights deal with three companies, one of which we are very familiar with. That is ESPN.
Heard of them.
We have watched have some level of breakup and get back together with MLB over the last, I guess, year plus. We don't have to review the ups and downs of that relationship.
I think we do because it is, I think we actually do right now because it is the reason we're here. Okay. So
that's true.
I'll play Sports Business Reporter. I'll throw that hat on for 1 minute as I rights-splain to our lovely listeners. So all of the rights were set to expire in 2028. Okay. When the Fox rights are up and the TBS rights are up and MLB was planning to bring all of their stuff to market at once. However, in their ESPN deal, MLB wanted an opt-out. And when they added that opt-out into the ESPN contract, like way back when, ESPN said, well, then we get one too. And MLB said, okay. So guess what? In 2025, at the beginning of the season, ESPN hit that opt-out. They activated it, and so did MLB. And then they got really mad at each other in public. It was very odd, very weird to see. Eventually, like me and my wife, we got back together and got married again. and here we are. But the reason that breakup is important, right, is because it throws some of these other things onto the open market that weren't going to be on the open market anyway. And that is the Sunday game that will be on NBC or Peacock or however it'll, you know, be sent to us. That is the Home Run Derby that will be on Netflix. That is opening day that will be on Netflix. All of those things before were just on ESPN, right? And so the Sunday night game that we have grown so accustomed to of listening to on ESPN, that's not going to be there anymore. That's now going to be an NBC property. If there had not been an opt-out and there had not been a breakup, that never goes to market. Now, the last point here that is incredibly relevant and kind of saves MLB's bacon from a financial perspective and makes sure that this is not a business catastrophe on their end is MLB sells the rights to MLB TV to ESPN, and that will now be purchased through ESPN. If they had not done that, they would have like been $600 in the red because of this opt-out, right? They would have lost money on this deal compared to what was on the ESPN contract already. Now, what does this all mean for you, the listener, and presumably the viewer? There will be more places that you have to pay for to watch all of the baseball. That is probably a bad thing. What is a good thing is that those of you who are not listening to this because baseball is not something that is incredibly important to you, baseball will be in front of those types of people more often, right? Both on NBC and on Netflix and whatever. Now, this deal is really just a temporary setup. This is only for 3 years, for 2026, 27, and 28. At that point, everything is going to go to market and there's going to be an even larger game of, you know, musical chairs with these rights. So don't settle in too comfortably. I think the thing that I'm most interested in, Jordan, is like, who's ESPN going to pick as, like, are they going to stick with the Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, David Cohn booth? Is NBC going to have an interesting, like, what is it all going to look like? And yeah, who are we going to be listening to?
There's been a lot of speculation about that. I don't know how it would end up being those other ones because it's not an ESPN property unless those people are leaving ESPN for that NBC Sunday game. Yeah, so it's probably going to be
I'm saying for those ESPN games that they still have. So ESPN has these like 30 one-off games that they'll be sprinkling in throughout.
Those are
the
during the week, and I'm sure they'll shuffle through some of the voices that we're used to seeing. I'm more interested in the new spots, who's doing on Netflix, who's doing on NBC, which is also getting Sunday Leadoff from taking it from our beloved Roku. And then we should also, the one you did not mention too that ESPN had is the Wild Card Series. So that also goes to NBC.
To
so that's important. Some other things are still staying, right? Apple TV is still doing Friday Night Baseball. Fox is still doing the All-Star Game. But yeah, Netflix getting involved is interesting. The Field of Dreams game is coming back. Netflix will be doing that. I believe that is Twins Phillies, if I saw that correctly. So that will be back for the first time since 2022 in 2026. But yeah, to your point, this is temporary. How it impacts different fans in different markets is also relevant because the MLB TV component is relevant to certain fans more than others because MLB has this in-market streaming rights for, I think, 5 teams. So it's hard for us to say exactly what you, the specific listener, will be impacted by this. But yes, it'll be spread out just like everything else is in media, not just sports media nowadays, but certainly sports media. But we will have to get ready for a much larger shakeup in 2028, which again, how 2027 goes and how much baseball we play in 2027 will probably impact the appetite and whatnot for these respective carriers.
So I am really interested in the Netflix side of things. Mm-hmm. When Apple got the rights on Friday night, those broadcasts look and feel a little different, where like the camera quality is crisper and the graphics are super minimalist. And like it all does have a distinctly different type of energy to it. I think Netflix is going to take it even farther. And I think it's going to be very cinematic so that it fits in with the rest of the content that's on their platform. What that looks like, I have no idea. I think it is very instructive that they took the Field of Dreams game, right? Because you can turn that into like a movie. We're going to get some funky camera angles. We're going to get some weird stuff on Netflix, at least for that game. And definitely for the Derby.
Yes. That was my last point. Is certainly for that game, but you know that game lends itself to it in a much more obvious way regardless. But people have been complaining about how the Home Run Derby is broadcast, not necessarily who the people are broadcasting it, but literally how it is shot and how you are left to follow it with the current format. I know that has been a topic of discussion recently. Now, as we've been very transparent about, we've been fortunate enough to be at the last 8-9 Derby. So this has not been a relevant thing for us since we're not watching it live. We're there.
too privileged to care about your peasant Homer Derby problems.
But obviously that's not the experience for most people. And I'm super curious to see how creative they get with the Derby. That is also a reason to mention one more thing about the All-Star Week, which is that NBC will be broadcasting the draft, and I believe also the Futures game, which for some reason that has still not been made clear, has now also been flipped, where the first round of the draft will be moved to Saturday, back from Sunday. The Futures game will be moved from Saturday to Sunday. If the Futures game is on Sunday night, thank you so much. I've been saying this for years. If it's still on Sunday during the day, during all those other last games of the first half, I don't understand why we did it this way. What this means for the draft, that's a whole other conversation. But NBC will also have that, which ESPN had over the past few years. So just wanted to mention that, or at least for the draft. I know the Futures game NBC has been on MLB Network. So, yeah.
NBC, call Jordan. Have him on your draft broadcast.
There you go. Thanks for the plug. Anyway, no worries, if there are other big
fan.
Manfred asked, announced some other things because he was at the owner meetings, but nothing else as important as where you can watch the baseball games. So we have two more bits of news that we want to hit before we take a break and do good, bad, ugly on a Tuesday. Oh, my goodness. Spoiler alert. One, I guess, transaction. Is it a transaction? Do you call hiring a manager a transaction?
No.
That's a good place to start.
No, it's not on the transaction log.
That is true. The Colorado Rockies have decided to retain interim manager Warren Schaefer, who replaced Bud Black midseason and made sure that those Rockies would only lose 119 games and not 122. Warren Schaefer will remain as the skipper of the Fightin' Rocks as they move forward into the Paul D. Podesta era. Warren Schaefer, who has been in the Rockies organization for quite some time, when he was named the interim manager, that was the first many people had ever seen this name in their lives. But now they will see it a little bit more often. He's still managing a bad baseball team. But congratulations to Warren Schaefer. And in very simple terms, I don't know what to make of this, because the narrative of the Rockies this offseason and the shocking hiring of Paul D. Podesta during their front office search is, okay, what is going to be different? And while I think that Warren Schaefer being in charge is more encouraging than Bud Black somehow still being in charge, with all due respect to Bud Black's legendary career, I don't know what this tells me about the direction of the franchise or if it really matters that much. I think that what's happening above Warren Schaefer, this is not a commentary of Warren Schaefer's candidacy whatsoever, because he might be the right guy. I think what's most important, and I would imagine you agree with this, what's happening above Warren Schaefer is far more important than what Warren Schaefer is doing. If this is just a matter of to keep continuity and to keep kind of the players at least following someone that they're familiar with, that makes sense to me. Also, you're getting kind of late. I mean, not that there aren't still other candidates out there that probably want to get back into managing in the big leagues. I have to imagine we've gotten to the point where they're like, we got to wrap this up and maybe we just stick with Warren, at least for the short term.
This was the only viable option, I think, at this point. I don't think you're getting any needle-moving managerial candidate to leave their current position at this point in the year. And I don't think this is a job that a lot of people want right now until they see the direction that this franchise is headed. Paul D. Podesta gave a quote via Patrick Saunders of the Denver Post, quote, "We're confident Warren is the right person to lead our club moving forward. He's established strong relationships with our players, understands the culture of this franchise, and embodies the energy and work ethic we want." That's all good and nice. Understands the culture of this franchise? Mr. D. Podesta, the culture of your franchise sucks. That's the culture. The culture is you have lost the most games over the last half decade. Congratulations. Sick culture, bro. And again, maybe that's nitpicking, because that's not Warren Schaefer's fault. But if you want to usher in a new era in Denver, having a guy who's been there for that long maybe doesn't feel like the best way to do that, especially giving him like a multi-year deal. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Do I think Warren Schaefer is going to be the manager of the next winning Rockies team? No, nor do I think he should be. And that's not his fault. This organization needs a total facelift, right? There are kind people there, but there are not. This is not working. It needs to change.
Yeah.
And so I think this is both the inevitable outcome, and it is also, you know, not an unfortunate one, but like, I am not exhilarated. If I'm a Rockies fan, this is not like, woohoo, like, that's, we got it. Like,
but I also think it's a product of how the front office search went. I think if they went out there, and again, I've made this point, like if they went out there and they said, Paul DePodesta, you're the guy, as soon as they decided to get a new front office, we would have been like, what the hell? But at least it would have had some level of conviction as opposed to going through all this interview process and interviewing other candidates and then being like, screw it. No, none of these guys want the job. Okay, Paul DePodesta, sure. And now we're way behind. And now we have to find a manager sooner. And now it's like, ah, screw it. We'll just keep Warren Schaefer.
And our new president of baseball operations. And our new president of baseball operations hasn't worked in the game for a decade and doesn't know other managers. So, like,
who's he going to call? Right. If you had hired Matt Forman or Amiel Sade a month earlier, they're probably bringing in a promising new candidate to usher in a new era of Rockies baseball. But that's not how this went. And so that is where you end up with Warren Schaefer. Again, this is not about Schaefer himself. Congratulations to the dude, because that's pretty freaking cool to be one of the 30 major league managers. And he's only, what, like 40, 39? So, no, it's not about him.
One more
point.
It's just
about how we got there, as it often is with the Rockies. Yeah.
Listening to Paul Toboni in DC talk over the last couple of months, he is someone, the new president of baseball operations here, he is someone who has been very vocal about starting a new culture in DC.
New.
Right? Mm-hmm. New. Where here you have DePodesta referencing the culture of this franchise. And yes, the Rockies have had a storied history in some respects, but this is not a situation where you want to maintain a culture that led to 119 losses. And that's all I have to say.
Yep. One more topic before we take a break. And that is a report from The Athletic that teams are interested in free agent Ryan Helsley as a starting pitcher. What? Why would you do that? Well, this is not catching us quite as off guard as it would have 6 years ago, because this is something that teams are doing where they are looking at relievers for one reason or another and saying, well, let's get into those reasons here in a second. But and saying, you know what? I actually, this guy's got great stuff. Of course, he's striking out a bunch of guys in relief. What if he could do that as a starter? Ooh, that would be fun. Now, Ryan Helsley is one of the more extreme cases of this. Yes, we've seen Seth Lugo. Oh, Clay Holmes, that felt pretty extreme. Almost all of these pitchers were starters earlier in their careers. Sometimes that was in the major leagues, in the case of Clay Holmes, very briefly. Ryan Helsley is not. This has not been a starting pitcher for quite a long time. He has been about as relievery as it gets as a capital C closer. Obviously was not that with the Mets because he was bad and Edwin Diaz was there. But one of the best relievers in baseball a year ago, right? And it's two pitches and he throws his max effort, one of the hardest throwers in baseball. And it's like, all right, this guy is a reliever. He belongs at the end of games, you know, striking out the side of the ninth. So we could debate about why Helsley is a good or bad candidate to be a starter. That's one
bad
way to do
candidate.
This. But
bad candidate.
Sure. Agreed. Okay. So moving forward, why do teams do this? This is where I'm just going to get as cynical as it could be. The Tigers are the team mentioned here. Okay. I don't want to pay for Dylan Cease. Oh, maybe we could just make this reliever and he can just throw 100 more innings. And it's not going to cost as much as Dylan Cease or Framber Valdez or even Michael King, maybe, you know, because I don't want to pay. This is what the Mets just did with Clay Holmes. And hilariously, it kind of worked for Clay Holmes. The rest of the strategy did not work, as we know.
Yeah.
But this is a way for teams to be cheap. That's a fact. Yes. Yes, it is creative. And yes, when it works, you have to credit the player development and the coaching. But this is a way you're looking at starting pitching and being like, wow, that's expensive. You know what's less expensive? Relief pitching that we can turn into a starter. That's
I'm
going to out
you cynical
can.
You.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not smart or not an advanced way. And by the way, I know in a lot of these cases, the relievers are like, hell yeah, I can be a starter again. I'll show them that I always meant to be in the rotation. And sometimes it works well for both team and player. At this point, this is also my read on it, is it's like, I don't want to pay starting pitching prices. I'll just turn a reliever into a starter. but maybe I'm wrong.
So here's why I somewhat disagree, and I don't have inside information on this or anything, but so I'm sure at some point the Tigers had a meeting that was like, are there any relievers we think we could, you know, develop into a starter? This feels like the type of thing that when it comes out, it's coming out via the agent of the player because it bolsters the market for them. It adds more opportunities, more places that they can go. I'm not going to name names, but I know of a situation over the last couple of years where a player who we got, a reliever, we got the, he would, he, there are teams interested in him as a starter. He wants to start. That didn't end up starting, who the player had no interest in being a starter. Like, it was just like a smart ploy by the agency. And so I am a little skeptical here that, like, do I think that Ryan Helsley will start a game in 2026? No. No, I do not. I do not think this is happening. I think this is much ado about nothing.
No, and it's a great point that it would absolutely benefit teams to say, oh, he could do this. But I don't know. I see it both ways. I see it as teams being like, oh, well, especially in like the Clay Holmes case, which again, that one like sort of worked until it didn't. But if that's your plan A, I don't like that plan A around very much. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, a very special Tuesday edition of The Good, The Bad, The Ugly.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It is Tuesday, but we're still delivering you an edition of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. This Friday's episode is going to be our time capsule episode, which we have already recorded. And so we said, you know what? Let's do Good, The Bad, The Ugly on Tuesday. There's no rules. As I said earlier, we have rights. Jordan, what's good?
Media rights. That's what we have.
We have rights.
Rights to create media. All right. My good this week is a video of Junior Caminero touring the currently in rehabilitation mode Tropicana Field. Junior wearing a hard hat, which also just looks like a baseball helmet, and wandering the halls of his home ballpark to see if they indeed are going to play in 2026 back at the Trop. And it does appear that that is going to be the case, according to Commissioner Manfred, that they are planning to have this roof back in good enough shape following the hurricane damage to play baseball in 2026. I know some people think this is stupid because why would you fix this crappy ballpark to then just either leave or tear it down or whatever? I don't really care about that right now. All I care about and why it isn't good is just Junior Caminero. What a delight. Congratulations to him, who, by the way, just had the birth of his baby daughter. But the best part of this video is at the very end, Junior Caminero is sitting in the bleachers and he is pretending like he is cheering on the Rays. And he says, "Junior, you're the best." He's like pretending he's the fans, and then he pretends like he hits a home run, and then he mimics the home run sound, the home run horn. They're not the only team that has this, of course, but the one that they play in the Trump is a very distinct noise, and his ability to mimic that noise, and then of course the Rays video editing, kind of plopping that in there. It made me laugh so hard the first time I watched it, and also just made me happy. Because for Junior Caminero, the Trop is, that's the place he's been, was working towards, you know, and that is where he made his major league debut, if I recall. And when you sign with the Rays, we can all make fun of the Trop as like compared to these other cathedrals of baseball that we have across the country. But for Caminero, it's like, no, that's the big leagues. That's what he pictured. And for him to get the taste of it and then to not get to play in it this year, but to get to go back and to be the guy, he's the guy. He's the Rays guy now.
Earlier in the video, he says, "My house."
Absolutely. Right. And so, Caminero, of course, one of my favorite players, and I'm excited for him that he gets to play in the Trop in 2026. And by the way, as someone who has not been to the Trop, one of the few stadiums that I've not been to, I hope that I get to watch Junior Caminero hit a home run and hear that home run horn in the Trop at some point in the next few years. That's my good.
We're going, baby. You and I make pilgrimage. Yeah. My good is a tweet from chess.com.
Oh, all right. How about
this tweet says, the first ever Super Pog Champs is here. Previous Pog Champs competitors are back to face off against challengers deemed too good to compete before. Basically, this is a celebrity chess tournament. And there are a bunch of people on here that I don't recognize. There's a guy who was an actor in Heroes. There's former NBA GM Daryl Morey. And there's Cincinnati Reds outfielder Will Benson. Who
did you say
former? He was not
Daryl Morey is still GM in charge he's in charge of the Sixers. Yeah. He's the Pobo for the Sixers.
He's the Pobo for the Sixers.
He's still Daryl Morey's still very much around.
Not a hoop knower. Yeah. Daryl Morey taking time out of his busy day running the Sixers to play some chess. Will Benson, who was tendered a contract last week to remain in the Cincinnati Reds, will be participating in this celebrity chess tournament. In the graphic, Jordan, what do you notice about the graphic, the picture of Will Benson?
Oh, I see. The hedge. Oh, wait. What about it?
He's wearing the Reds City Connect hat. Now, yes, the thing about that is that it looks a little too much given the the filter on this, like a Guardians hat where he also played. It looks navy and not black.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
But also,
Well, I like that the description on chess.com is the following. Okay. Former chess novices from past tournaments and strong chess loving celebrities are ready to showcase their talent. The most high level PogChamps yet. The event will feature a $50,000 prize fund. Some of the most successful creators and celebrities in the world. I love Will Benson. Is he one of the most successful celebrities in the world?
No. Celebrity, definitely not. I think being a Major League Baseball player is absolute of any status, and he's a major leaguer. Like there's no, at this point, there's no disputing that. Is every bit as impressive as these streamers who I know more of Gen Z knows who these people are. You know, Andrea Botez and Tyler One are much more popular than Will Benson, but I think it's okay. I think it's fine calling Will Benson that. This is good.
I'm excited to watch Will Benson play some chess.
I don't know why.
It's just good to have.
Yeah,
it's good to have other interests.
Yeah, I'm going to ask, I'm going to try to find out if Stephen Kwan got the invite here, because I know that the Will Benson chess interest, I don't know if it started, but I know a big part of the chess boom for Will Benson involved his time with Cleveland and they're big chess fans in the Cleveland clubhouse. I will have to ask Stephen Kwan about that. All right, let's go to bad. My bad this week, is this fair to be bad? I don't know. But University of Tennessee pitching coach Frank Anderson is departing to join Tony Vitello in San Francisco. This comes about a week after it is reported that their strength coach, Quentin Eberhardt, I believe is the pronunciation, who's also been there for Tony V's tenure, will also be joining the Giants organization. And again, congrats to Frank Anderson, who will also be working in professional baseball for, I believe, the very first time and has a good reputation as a college coach. I don't like how this has gone. Like, to me, if Tony's going to leave, awesome. Hell yeah. If you want to bring your guys, just bring them. You know, that I feel like that needed to be part of the thing earlier on than just like slowly losing staff member after staff member who realized like, oh, maybe I should go. And also that like Tony's still like, yeah, of course that's who he's pulling from because those are the guys.
That's who he knows.
So well, I will again,
let me also add when this happens
bad. Yeah,
when this happens pro team to pro team, there are restrictions on how many people you can bring with you, right? So like Paul Toboni going from the Red Sox to the Nats, there are only so many former Red Sox employees he's allowed to bring along with him. Those rules don't apply to college, and so because of that, Tony V could, if he wanted to, in the employees wanted to rip up the whole freaking staff and travel with it to San Francisco.
Right. And so that's what just feels a little weird. Frank Anderson will not be the major league pitching coach, to clarify. I believe they hired Justin Message, which is interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I just, this, maybe I'm being a, you know, a grumpy old man, but it just feels like this is how this is going. I don't love that. So that's my bad.
Yeah. My bad is Hal Steinbrenner, owner of the Yankees, crying poor. This is a tweet from Brian Hoke, who covers the team at MLB.com. Hal Steinbrenner did his, "Hi, I'm Hal Steinbrenner. It's November," talk with Yankees reporters, in which he wore a Scranton Rail Riders shirt.
This was
which
good.
I thought that was good. That's good. That was great. Yeah. But this tweet from Brian Hoke says, Hal Steinbrenner said it is, quote, not fair to assume the Yankees made a profit. Quote, "I don't want to get into it, but that's not a fair statement or an accurate statement. Everyone wants to talk about revenues. They need to talk about our expenses, including the $100 million expense to the city of New York that we have to pay every February 1st, including the COVID year. It all starts to add up in a hurry." Here's why this is bad. Number one, I think it is incredibly fair to assume that the New York freaking Yankees are making a profit. Okay? If I can't assume that the biggest baseball franchise, still the biggest, okay, still the most popular in the world, selling more merch by a factor of freaking a 50. If I cannot assume that the Yankees are making a profit, then what in this world can I assume? Okay? So maybe they're not making a profit, but I do think it is fair to assume as much. Next point. If you're not making the profit, Mr. Steinbrenner, open the books. Prove it. Okay? Prove it. It is very difficult to watch the Yankees exist and assume that they don't have the financial wherewithal, the financial ability, the coins to spend money. That is, when you go to Yankee Stadium, Jordan, you walk around, are you like, man, this is, it's a real dump. Like, these guys must be,
they're struggling,
you know, penny pinching. Yeah. What are we doing here? Now, look, do the Yankees have more expenses than we think about? Maybe. I don't know for sure. I can't believe you. I don't know what to say. And the last thing I will say about this is, based upon the way that the Dodgers have operated the last few years, right? And I assume that is related to this comment and was worked into the question somehow. If you are running the Yankees and you cannot make them make a profit, you are bad at business. Okay? Someone else should step in, right? If you, like, that does not make sense to me. That's a you problem, or, big dog.
Or if you're Steve Cohen, you don't care about that because you just want to win a championship.
Those
which
are
I'm sure
Hal
Steinbrenner wants to also. Yeah.
Sure.
But I will say, Hal said some other interesting things in this presser involving the dot. He was like, yeah, okay, do I need to spend
stuff,
more?
Dude.
Maybe, maybe not. He also had a quote that was like, yeah, me and the Mets, we spent a lot of money, and how'd that work out for us? That was basically being like, oh, why don't you just do what the Dodgers are doing?
Sure.
Spend all the money. It's like, well.
I'm less interested, honestly, in that side of things. Like, Hal Steinbrenner saying it's not fair to assume his franchise makes a profit means one of two things. Hal Steinbrenner is lying about them making a profit, mm-hmm. about them not making a profit, or he sucks at running a business. Those are the only options then. Sorry, that's all bad.
Yeah, it's, I would say that fits into bad. Which is why we are doing the Good, the Bad, the Ugla on a Tuesday. Let's go to Ugla. Why don't you go first here? Because this is definitely Ugla, but I only read part of this story and I am still confused. So tell us about Japanese boxing and the Blue Jays.
This is a headline at The Athletic. Japanese boxing ring festooned with Toronto Blue Jays logos broke MLB's marketing rules. Getting festooned into the headline is good. That's great.
Great work for Mitch Bannon and Evangelic. Wow. And the editors.
Here's the deal.
Presumably put festooned in the headline.
Who festooned festoon into the headline. There was a big boxing match in Japan. All right. And on the ring, like on the ground in the ring and like the padding on the sides of the ring were just like a bunch of Blue Jays logos. Very odd, first of all. Kind of fun, I guess. But here's what, here's the upshot of this, is that the Jays broke MLB's like international marketing rules by doing this. The Jays, the article notes that the Jays knew about this in advance. They did not receive money in exchange for this. They're just, you know, they're just putting themselves out there, just getting the word out about the Toronto Blue Jays, which is very fun. And I don't know if MLB is going to like punish the Jays or is like actually mad at the Jays. I assume that there are various hoops you need to jump through to advertise in certain places because certain teams have rights in certain markets and whatever. But the idea that MLB is like a little mad about this is so ugly, just in the, you know, the shadow of the Dodgers dominating the market in Japan. Like the Blue Jays slapping a couple of logos onto a random boxing ring, getting them in hot water is, just like is someone, very funny.
Someone at the league office like saw this and be like, they can't do that. Actually,
I like the idea that someone at the league office like, was watching the boxing match.
Right. Right.
They just tuned they're, in like, really
Japanese boxing. They're like, welterweight. Hold on a second. I got to make a phone call. Get the commissioner on the line. This is unacceptable. This ring is festooned. All right. We will stay in Asia for my Ugla. Of course, we went heavy on the NPB check-in last week. For my Ugla, I'm going to do a little KBO update. Congratulations to Cody Ponce on winning the MVP. He received more, I believe, about 75% of the vote. That's because former first baseman Lewin Diaz of the Baltimore Orioles and a few other teams after being DFA'd 100 times, Leo Diaz hit 50 home runs for the Samsung Lions this year, but that was not enough to win MVP over Cody Ponce. So congratulations to him. Two other transactions I want to mention, One is that the Kiwoom Heroes posted their star third baseman, Sung Moon Song, who is going to try and come over to MLB. He was one of the best players in Korea over the last couple of years. Not as long of a track record, so he's not someone that is expected to sign a huge contract or anything. But there's a chance this guy gets a major league contract because he's a third baseman that can play solid defense and can hit pretty well from the left side. So keep that name in mind, Sung Moon Song. But the two signings I really want to mention, one is my guy, Baek Ho-gung, former slugger of the KT Wiz. I'm wearing my Wiz hat
this
today.
This was bad.
This bummed me out. He was a full free agent this winter and had thought about coming to MLB.
But you need to give a little bit more Baek Ho-gung background.
Okay,
I think you need Baek Ho-gung, just a little bit more.
KT Wiz was one of the brightest young talents in Korea. One of just the most fun hitters to watch of my lifetime, truly. 2020, when we were all watching KBO, this dude stole my heart and continued to rake over the next few years. Then his career kind of gets
chonk. He's a chonk with big power.
Big boy, big swing, lefty bat speed, just so much fun to watch. Career kind of goes off the rails. He deals with some off-the-field stuff and some injuries. But he's been okay for KT the last couple of years, but he becomes a free agent. I hoped he would come over to Major League Baseball, but that did not happen as he has signed a new deal to go to the Hanwha Eagles. Oh, Cody Ponce's Hanwha Eagles. Breaking my heart as a KT Wiz fan to see him go. But, Jake, a small bit of consolation, because the Wiz have already replaced Baek Ho-gung with a signing, and it is someone near and dear to your heart, and that is the great Hyun-Soo Kim. Hyun-Soo Kim, who turns 38 in January, of course, had a very memorable major league stint with the Baltimore Orioles. He spent like 10 years with the Doosan Bears, went to MLB for a few years, came back, has been with the LG Twins since 2018. And now he will continue his career with the KT Wiz as he chases 3,000 hits in KBO, which I'm not sure has ever happened. But congratulations to Hyun-Soo Kim on continuing his lengthy professional baseball career. That is it. That is my Ugla. That is your good. That is my bad. That is your bad, good, bad Ugla. There it was. Later this week, You will hear from us pre-recorded our 2025 Time Capsule episode, the sixth annual episode. It is just us, no special guest, no Foolish Baseball. He was busy. We still like
he
him.
He hates us
no
now.
No beef there. No.
Tons of beef.
Just us reviewing the 2025 season with all of our favorite items. And we hope you enjoy it. We've already recorded it. So you'll hear that on Friday. We hope you enjoy that. Otherwise, everyone have a good Thanksgiving. Email us, baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. And we will be back next week. Just a week before the winter meetings. Oh boy, the hot stove rolls on. Thank you to Andrew Hart, Stanger Rosas for producing. Everyone have a good Thanksgiving. Goodbye.